Kapitál. Mesačník, pri ktorom sa nedá relaxovať.
Thank you so much. We will leave it here during my short introduction. I think we all here can use some infrastructural look on things. And from infrastructure, we'll be getting to the extra structure, perhaps, with Marina Grženič. She works between Ljubljana, Slovenia, and Austria. She comes from Institute of Philosophy of Slovene Academy of Sciences and Arts. She's professor at Academy of Fine Arts Vienna, artist, curator, collaborative filmmaker. And I heard that in the following lecture, there will be topics of refugees, nationalism, racism, and one of my very favorite words, necrocapitalism.
Excellent. So maybe I just say where I want to go. Here you see the people that I would like to thank and all those who organize. But actually, I want to go to this title that I prepare. So what is the last of Europe? And I want to bring not products and goods going around, but actually disposed people, and especially to think maybe very fast to some of the terminology that I use and that I work with. So this is racial capitalism, disposed refugees, turbo-fascist nationalisms, and necrocapitalism. And this is what we actually are living, and we are part of this. And also some part that I want to just bring as notions. So, as I said, I want to talk about the last of Europe. What is really the last of Europe, no? The last is actually this process of racialization, disposed refugees, turbo-fascist, fascist nationalisms, necrocapitalism, and what I say here, practically the contemporary necropolitical mafia structures or necrodemocracy. So a lot to do with the question of necrocapitalism. One of the point of departure, we will go through some slides and some of these terms, is one of my major, theses is Europe is a castrated space, a space where thousands of refugees have been imprisoned, and a space that tries on the production of control through a constant improvement of security, or rather through laws, procedures, and forms of governmentality that supports security within the European Union and its establishment as Fortress Europe. This is where we live. But this Fortress Europe is not just as a totality, has a lot of differences. So on one hand, there is the old colonialism, characterized by the exploitation of wealth through past colonialism. We have not to forget, and I see we forget always, the Atlantic trade in black people, stripped of their humanity to become a commodity. This is maybe the commodity that we should talk. Or on the other hand, what you can read here is actually this system of coloniality that is present, not the past colonialism that combines militarism, local wars, accumulation through expropriation, and also that works all hand in hand with multinational corporations and local rapacious political elites and their forms of all the new power structures. And some cases about this really at home, because fresh, as I said, from the oven, from the former poor communist countries, are they really poor? They're because they had the totalitarian ballast, so we have now to think how well, they said many times, we are supposedly colonized. Are we? Are they? The first case is just the fresh one that happened few weeks ago. This was actually the court freeze a week ago, or I think it was a week, 10 days ago, a tycoon in a retrial over 2011-18 killing of the journalist Jan Kuciak and also his fiancée, and this tycoon Marian Kochner, was found not guilty of murdering them, but it's not Slovakia alone, because I'm coming from Slovenia. I live there and work there, and we have something more historical, that is the legacy of almost 30 years of the constitution of the new states that happened parallel, and this is the category of the erased people. They are called in Slovenia izbrisani, that I think the word is very similar. And what happened for the izbrisani, this you see one of these protests going on, by how much people we talk about a quantity of 25,671 people that were actually stripped, or they were erased, is bris, put outside the register of permanent residents. And with this, these people who were coming from other republics of once our common state called Yugoslavia, today former Yugoslavia, is not existing anymore. So they were actually stripped of with this, taking them the register of permanent residence, they were stripped from their legal status. So what we have from that period on until today, without recognizing this, we have thousands of people who were pushed not only in real deaths, but also what is called social death. So you don't have anything. You don't have social security. Your children that are born cannot go to school. You have no pension. And this happened from 1992. So it's really a long period of 30 years. And when finally, it was a lot of international and European courts into the game. The Slovenian state, when it tried to make like a gesture of asking for, let's say, to shamefully announce that it was a mistake, a part of our Slovenian government just left the parliament. So practically, this is a legacy that I call necropolitical legacy. So you have 25,000 people on which you establish the new state of Slovenia from 1991. You do this in 1992, when we are already recognized by Germans and some other states. So it's not reason, as he said, you have to actually, with hatred, they punish and put outside of the states those who can endanger you. And who were they? They were actually a working class coming from other parts of ex-Yugoslavia, mostly Bosnians, that were the lowest class because they were workers, and they were termed that they are endangering the new Slovenian state. So, practically, we have Fortress Europe and the racial colonial divide, because these processes of discrimination are connected with the refugees, with racialization, and with the this racialization is coming from the colonial divide, this oriental legacy, and it's superimposed onto the division East and West, because today we mostly talk about Europe, and we have a position inside, and then it's this differentiation with poor countries that were totalitarian in the past. We were also colonized. Now we will behave the same as the others from the Occident. Fortress Europe has also developed an internal administrative system of tight processes of discrimination and racialization. I put some of the examples. These discrimination processes from, let's say, parts of former Eastern Europe. And also it's what is important, what we can see is a process of segmentation of this fortress Europe, this totalitarian bloc, that then it's in relations to other parts of the world, because it reflects brutal class and racial differentiations on all levels, on labor markets, on education, health, social security system, and so on. But they are all part of this system of racialization. And race, in this analysis of how we think about the global capitalism, is fading very much out. And why? Because the system of whiteness that we are is a system of really power, and it's a system in which we willingly go with this Occidental division. So theoreticians Kwame Nimako and also another theoretician, Achille Mbembe, that maybe you are familiar. Kwame Nimako is in based in the Netherlands, and Achille Mbembe in South Africa. And they talk practically about this space of Europe, and call differently one or the other of Europe psychosis. And one of these psychoses is precisely based on this production of people who are disposed. They cannot enter the this what is called Fortress of Europe, and practically, as Kwame Nimako says, and Europe psychosis, it's here because aim to keep Africans, that we see very clearly with all these ways of rhetorics and cynicism. We are actually trying to help them because they don't know what they are doing when they are trying to come to Europe. So it's one of the main targets is precisely these others. And these others are really to be seen not as a cultural category, but produced along the racialization that is actually repeating the colonial divide. So the non-citizen of non-Western origins are caught in a vicious transactions in the present situation in Europe that is called the sometimes like we face the refugee crisis, that is in fact the crisis of predominantly the European Union and its Occidental humanitarian governmentality principle. And this European Union, we are also part, so we are not outside of this. What is important is that despite several projects aimed at fostering a Europe-wide dialogue between citizens, refugees, asylum seekers, NGOs, politicians, and European leaders, things are and are they were and are remaining scandalous. EU governments conceive and implement tough immigration laws in Europe and conclude dirty agreements with states bordering Europe. Again, in this story, we, the poor former Eastern European countries, are not outside. We are actually at the center and practically working with this. So I decided to bring some artistic cultural projects that point precisely to this, maybe a place where some of the ideas can be more palpable. So one of the projects that I just want to mention but not showing so much is a project called Will You Marry Me? Border Politics of Passports. And the artist is Henry Denise that is preparing a project that will be presented. It's not yet in June 2023. And practically, she's saying, give me your passports of the EU and not a ring. I can enchain myself inside the fortress Europe and stop and want to stop deportation. And so this is practically a work in which the focus is into getting the European passports. or when it was a marriage between Henry Denise and Oke Fial, and the walls were going in such a way, saying, Henry, I will not show the images because the work will be presented in June, but in Vienna. So Henry is saying, I, Henry Denise, take you, Oke Fial, to be my lawfully wedded spouse in this performance called Marriage. I acknowledge that this union is not based on romantic love, but rather on practicality, respect, and our mutual understanding of how bias and violent migration and its border policies are in Europe. However, I promise to play my part with sincerity and authenticity to bring this performance to life. I vow to collaborate with you to create a portrayal that challenges societal norms. I promise to support you in your endeavors and to bring my best to the stage every time we perform together. In this performance called Marriage, I give you my word that I will bring my heart and soul to make this a memorable and impactful experience for both of us, for the audience and for this bureaucratic European system. I vow to bring this story to life with passion, humor, and poignancy until our mission is accomplished and we gracefully divorce. That means you get the passport and you actually can go in a different direction. And it was also interesting that though we talk the base and the superstructure, but mostly on the base, the superstructure and the institutions are collaborating directly in these processes of racial capitalism. So the East-West division of Europe has, so to speak, disappeared, and we practically today, we see very clearly speak about democracy and totalitarianism. And the most central division that is covered, because it is tacitly passed over, is precisely the racial colonial division of the European Union and Europe, establishing and maintaining sharp distance from Africa and the Middle East. This is, I think, central for understanding these processes of how we can think of Europe. And nobody wants to talk about this. Nobody. It's just passé. Give me a break. Don't talk about. So Natraka points, theoretician from Great Britain, points that recent work by Sarah Ferris, Silvia Federici, and others has highlighted that the gendered racialized division of labor within white, patriarchal capitalist society reproduces the feminized and racialized character of this work across the supposed divide of the global north and global south, where women and feminized workers from the global south, that is, workers of color, are often responsible for the social reproduction of bodies in or from the global north. Such work has also highlighted that wage reproductive labor makes up a significant portion of the GDP in Western economies. And Natratha is saying that practically global North doesn't exist in isolation because it's the wealth of the global North is extracted and has like accrued and accumulated. So this extractivism and these relations has to be pointed out. So this was two images from a film that we are doing with Tiasza Kanzler and Jovita Pristoshek, and will be soon presented, has a title, Insurgent Flows, Trans Decolonial and Black Marxist Futures. In abolition geography, another theoretician that you probably know and are familiar, so abolition geography and the problem of innocence, scholar Ruth Wilson Gilmore described all these processes as follows. One of the results of contemporary racial capitalism's relentlessly restructured state institutional capacity and the discourses and the practices that combine to enliven them is the outing state-state, governmental capacity dominated by mainstream parties and policies that achieve power on the platform that states are bad and should shrink. End of quotation. Moreover, it seems that former Eastern Europe is like isolated from all of this and that has to be treated differently. But my point is, this is not a conceivable thesis. If there is a difference, it is based on a paradox. Everything that is in the West is simply more brutal, aggravated and glorified in the former Eastern Europe. And I want also to expose that global neoliberal capitalism, which today expresses itself in a variety of adjectives that are not only, that are absolutely not adjectives, but levels of conditions such as necrocapitalism, finance capitalism, necro-sovereignty. So this necro, this word that means death, it's actually to be added to all what we talk these days, and we see this very clearly, was able to present a neat image of the civilized world, while the other spaces, territories showed a retributing hyper-nationalism, brutal processes of obvious human rights violations, and so on. So this is how also it's presented, no? We try, we are here in the Fortress Europe, then you see around what's going on in Africa and other parts, and this is actually presented as brutal processes, and it's emphasized human rights violation, and so on and so on. We can talk about the EU and the rest of Europe, but the parallels between the EU and us, for example, if we take US and UK, which left the EU, cannot be ignored. If you think the rotten democracy in the US that has emerged as a result of the post-Trump era is an exception, it's not, because it's slowly but steadily renewing itself in the EU and especially in the UK. So the necrostate, what could be this necrostate after all these words necro, necro, necro? What is the necrostate indeed? It stems from necropolitics, whose theoretical framework was exactly 20 years ago presented by Achille Mbembe, the theoretician that I mentioned. And the simplest definition of necropolitics is that it's a form of a government in which the state or some other governing figure, because not only the state, a despotic ruler or a coalition, determines who may live and who must die. And this who may live and who must die is the shortest and the smallest definition of necropolitics. And how it's coming to understand this, because before we were always talking about biopolitics, we talk already and still about Foucault is always brought back from the 70s. But if you think about biopolitics, there was another sort of things. There practically after the Second World War and the Nazi regime and the complicity of the Occident in what was going on and other states in Europe, everything was focused on this bio, on this making life for the Occident. And all the other, doesn't matter what was happening, all the other states was actually let to die, to live. That means if you can live, you can live, if not, it's your problem. But what happens with necropolitics in 2003, Mbembe came to think after the 2001, that is really a very important frame, it's that we found ourselves in actually this situation. You can live if you have your sources. Let live. This is what you can get. And or if not, if you are making troubles and so on, so then you are made to die. So who may live and who must die is this really most simple formula to understand necropolitics. And necropolitics, as we could see also before in these two cases, Slovakia and Slovenia, has a different rhythm of violence and speed, as well as its own history. because this concept has existed now for 20 years. And what means is that is reflecting also the transformation of capitalism, or what is possible to say instead of neoliberal global capitalism, practically we can talk about necrocapitalism. And how it works, it makes profit with war machines and destroy the lives of thousands whose death brings profit. So these are actually these disposable. Thousands, millions are absolutely left. So nobody, for example, talk about Afghanistan these days, no? And what is going on there? A pure necro-capitalism of the worst that we can think. And we are actually part of this. We are the people on the street protesting, no? Asking what's going on with Afghanistan. Where are these, the worries about the women in Afghanistan, the reason why it was said, not the reason was actually dope and other things and rare materials, but the reason was presented in the public, we are going there to save the women. Nobody talks about these things. So necrocapitalism is not something that suddenly fell from the sky by a hyper-condensed form of capitalist reproduction and the new way of making money. Not with an army of proletarians looking for work, but with a surplus population just waiting to be ousted. This is the key, dispossession, and we are also in this line. So we cannot just say, okay, we are white, we just watch this and then say, this is not our business. Sooner or later, it's actually also that fortress is taking and cleaning, for example, the peripheral regarding and making population that are waiting to be ousted. Also, how to understand this necropolitics is with some stories that are super important, completely left out of any kind of thinking, and this is the Srebrenica genocide in 1995 that actually can be termed one of the most clear examples, again, of necropolitics. And necropolitics was not only at that point going in Europe, but we had actually Rwanda. But they were going on in two different geographical spaces. So the violent removal of fathers, the erasures, takes the form of the state of exceptions. So this is also one of the moments, if we think of the Srebrenica genocide, where in Bosnia and Herzegovina in 1995, and the whole space, if we go back again to these former Eastern European countries, practically we can see that transitional capital and accumulation in the former socialism require a state of exception. The original white accumulation in transition was a turbo pyramidal privatization. And if you talk with your parents, you will see precisely how these processes went and also what they brought. So we are all this former Eastern Europe coming out, and we see this. The results was, and today it's not anymore hidden, wild nationalism and proto-fascism. This is interesting because from these cases like Membek in South Africa and also looking back what was going on in former Eastern European space, specifically in ex-Yugoslavia, different theoreticians could formulate something that then, after that, started to be very palpable in the whole European and also world spectrum. So when necrocapitalism necropolitics were termed, it was impossible to think that this has anything to do with the global world, less to do, for example, with Europe. But practically, there was already a history of this. We didn't know the term. So when happened the genocide in Srebrenica, a feminist theoretician, Žarana Papić, was so brave and said that this is a turbo-fascism. And when she started to think about everything what was connected with Serbia, she said practically turbo-fascism was fundamental to execute the Srebrenica genocide in Bosnia and Herzegovina because it worked with killing anyone produced as the other. And why turbo-fascism? Because actually it was going on in the frenetic rituals of a mixture of turbo, folk music, kitsch, and paramilitary units that were coming and supporting the state violence that was key in what was going on in the ex-Yugoslavia. So in that Srebrenica genocide that was in 1995, 8,000 Bosniak Muslim men and boys in the vicinity of the town of Srebrenica in July 1995 was simply in few days slaughtered. And it lasted decades in order that death was pronounced and termed as a genocide. That is something much more bigger to just to say things happen in the world. So if we come to this point of this turbo-fascist nationalism that we see, it's actually expanding in European context. If you think about what's going on in former Eastern European countries, you have turbo-fascist nationalism on every corner, just coming out from Slovenia to Hungary, to Poland. It's possible to detect. And it's very interesting that all these processes are also part of what is termed by Tanja Marković consensual violent collective amnesia. We don't remember these things. They are practically not existing. Not even the Srebrenica genocide. It's recognized because, as you know, it's actually, if you say that the genocide didn't happen, you actually have to go to prison. But in Serbia, on the official government, they say the genocide never happened. And this is then also repeated in Republika Srpska in Bosnia and Herzegovina. She also said, Tanja Marković, that about these processes in today, Serbia is now a case of having a discussion. And what her question is, the first question that should be posed is actually, what did you do in the war, Daddy? This will be a question posed, or where you been? You can ask your fathers, as we all asked, where you been after the fall of the Berlin Wall? Where actually, how? What was the place in these processes of privatizations and turbo processes of dismantling the society and also the rise of fascism? I just want to see what is the time. Okay, good. Anyway, I'm coming to an end. And we now think, no, this has nothing to do with us, but these processes of racialization just happened when the war in Ukraine started, the aggression on Ukraine. All what I was now describing, despite the Black Lives Matter, happened right there. And again, the former Eastern European countries were at the forefront because at that point, along the border between Ukraine and Poland specifically, but other countries, we could see an unbelievable process. And this was the process of selecting the right foreigners from the wrong. In other words, the real refugees or migrants from the world that was practically based on racial profiling. Skin color decides in that case. And for almost a week or 10 days, nobody was disturbed. Nobody asked these things in Slovenia. The declaration of our government was, finally, we have in front of us the right refugees. They are our refugees. So these processes of racialization are key for the necropolitics that we see, and they are absolutely because of the system of whiteness, the very violent system of whiteness that we are all taking part, and absolutely not reflections in the society, in theory, not in academic text. Everything is like a totalitarian block. We are poor. We have to think what is our place. Practically, we had in front of us these processes of racialization going along the line of division, and this was the colonial division. And many said, I have nothing to do with this. We were not part of the colonialism. So this is not our case. But still, the whole process was actually there. So redefinition of the foreigner based on strict racial profiling is based practically on the skin color, and that elements even more insight and give power to far right populism. So this will be the story. Maybe another part will be necessary that I prepared, but because we are running out of time, I will stop here, and I brought some of the terms that I wanted. Thank you very much.
Prednáška je súčasťou podujatia Last After All, ktoré z verejných zdrojov podporil Fond na podporu umenia, Nadácia mesta Bratislavy a Friedrich Ebert Stiftung so zastúpením v Bratislave.
Počúvali ste Capitalks, podcast angažovaného mesačníka Kapitál. Viac článkov nájdete na webovej stránke www.kapital-noviny.sk, kde nás môžete podporiť napríklad objednaním predplatného. Za čo vám vopred ďakujeme.